is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, courage.
At Startup Health, as many of you know, we work with companies for multiple years as they're on their journey to build great companies. Because of that model, we work with them through multiple capital raises as they progress from seed to Series A to B, and increasingly becomes more and more important to pick the right investors. They're not just writing checks. They become your advisors, your distribution channels, board members, maybe even your friends, hopefully, people that you spend a lot of time with. So we're going to have a panel today featuring a Startup Health company. Asif Khan is the founder of CareMerch, put together a really great syndicate of investors, both strategic and VCs, last year. The panel is going to be moderated by Jay Sullivan, a partner at DLA Piper, one of our great event sponsors. Jay, if you want to come on up. We have Matt Carls from Cambia Health, Casey Silver from Arsenal Venture Partners, Ruchita Sinha from GE Ventures, our long-term partner and good friend, and of course we have Asif, trailblazer going down the middle, making his own path. And with that, I'll hand it over to Jay to kick off the panel.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Well, we're thrilled to be here from DLA Piper. I'm a partner in our corporate group and do a lot of work with healthcare companies and investors of various shapes and sizes. And it's a great pleasure to have this panel here today and to be part of the Startup Health Festival here at JP Morgan Week in San Francisco. The thesis for this discussion is thinking back several months when we were trying to decide what we wanted to talk about. And before I even knew the tagline for the conference, it aligned very well. It's, you know, where moonshots begin and transformations happen. It's all about bringing together a great set of partners to build incredible digital healthcare companies. And we believe, at DLA and otherwise, that if you have a great, strong, emerging digital health company and you combine blue chip financial investors along with creative and bold strategic partners and investors, then really great things can happen. This is not to echo Steve and Unity. It's not to say that it's an easy road. There will be many stumbles along the way, and we'd love to just explore that journey a bit more through the lens of CareMerch. With that, maybe I'll start with Asif, and we could just go down the line with brief intros. I'd love to hear a little bit more about CareMerch for the group. For the investors and partners, I'd love to hear what brought you to Startup Health, and then we'll get into details with CareMerch.
Thank you. So first of all, very humbled to be here with everybody. CareMerch is a care management and care coordination platform. We are focused on higher acuity patients, seniors, in post-acute care, so senior living facilities and home care. What we found is, you know, everybody who is worried about these patients, these high-risk patients, are the stakeholders, your, you know, health systems for avoiding readmissions, to payers who are managing risk, or bundled payment, or ACOs. They're all concerned about these high-risk patients. The problem is, once the patient leaves, you don't know what happens. So we provide the senior living providers simple tools so they can capture data within CareMerch, or we ingest it from their EHRs or devices or what have you. And then we have these protocols that the providers or payers can build. So you have a CHF patient that gained 5 pounds over the next 24 hours. Oh, send a notification to the hospitalist to do this, home care to do that, and primary care physician to do something else, and let the family know something. So you can create these protocols, so it brings everybody together on an exception base. So this allows people to focus on doing their job and not do their job and try to communicate and tell people what to do. So they just focus on doing their job, and we extract the necessary information and bring everybody together. So that's, in a nutshell, what CareMerch is.
Excellent. Thank you. Just one other thought on that. When we were speaking a couple months back about the panel, you know, you spoke about this virality, and one concept that really took hold with me was that every one of us in this room are tethered to devices nonstop, and we all have very busy lives. And it was the focus of the business that was trying not to change necessarily physician behavior or provider behavior, but to work within that platform. That was really an interesting point to me. So, Ruchita?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ruchita Sen, and I'm with GE Ventures. We are the corporate venture arm of General Electric. And at GE Ventures, we have four pillars towards fostering innovation. The first is equity investing, which we invest in healthcare, energy, software, and manufacturing. The next is incubations, which is starting new businesses from scratch. The third is licensing, and the fourth is our thought leadership arm called Healthy Imagination. Within healthcare, we invest in medical devices, diagnostics, and genomics, and healthcare IT and services / digital health. So when we first started getting interested in digital health, this was back 3 years ago, right as we were formed as an organization and a venture fund, we wanted to start looking at this new and emerging space with a trusted partner. And that's when we got introduced to Steve and Unity. And it's been a tremendous experience over the last 3 years with them. We first selected 15 companies into our portfolio and have not only grown with the companies, but learned a tremendous amount and invested in those companies like CareMerge. Since then, we've announced a 2.0 version of our program because we couldn't get enough of the team at Startup Health. So we just announced back in the fall a second program where we're going to select 10 more companies into our program.
So hello, everybody. My name is Casey Silver. I'm with Arsenal Venture Partners. Arsenal's been venture investing for about 15 years. We're based in Florida, but we have offices here in Palo Alto and the two in the Midwest. I think what's different about Arsenal is we have this mix of funds, and two out of the three funds are what we call strategic venture funds, and we're partnered with different federal agencies on there. We manage the Department of Defense's one and only venture fund. We've had that for about 12 years. As most of you know, the DoD is one of the biggest payers and providers of healthcare in the country. And then we manage a fund for the state of Florida and the Department of Treasury as well. And then we also have a traditional fund, kind of as defined by RLP base. So we've known Startup Health for about 2 years now, about as long as we've been involved with CareMerge. We're really impressed with the Startup Health team. We had been tracking their portfolio for a while before we got formally introduced, and now sometimes we talk weekly, monthly, depending upon what's going on, participate in the network access sessions. Startup Health is this really cool kind of startup in itself. I mean, this is the second year now, I guess, that they've done something around JP Morgan, and they put on an event that competes with JP Morgan. They've been doing it for 33 or 34 years. So thanks to Startup Health for including Arsenal, and it's good to be here.
Hi, everybody. Matt Carls with Cambia Health. Cambia is a strategic and cause-driven healthcare investor. We have a family of companies based primarily in the Pacific Northwest, and we have all around healthcare, and we have specifically significant scale given our affiliation with four Blue Cross Blue Shield affiliated health plans and other health plan lines of business. We were the lead investor in CareMerge, and we've been working with Startup Health and their team for several years now. And it's been a great relationship because we often seek to develop co-investment relationships and sourcing relationships where we have access to really sharp people, broad network, and people who are kind of at the forefront of the transformative companies that will go a long way in shaping what healthcare looks like in the future. And so they've brought us a lot of potential deal flow. They've introduced us to a lot of entrepreneurs, and they've helped add a lot of value to the companies that we're allowed through this relationship to kind of get to know before making a smarter investment decision.
Excellent. So inherent in this panel is that everyone else other than me knows each other rather well. With that in mind, I'd love to hear more about, and Matt stole my next question, but he was first at the table in the investment, but I'd love to know, why CareMerge for Cambia and then also for the other investors and partners. Yeah. What about CareMerge, or what made you follow, or what made you come in subsequent?
Sure. So what was really interesting, the first thing that hit us is we're starting to work with ASIF and hearing better understanding the dynamics around the need in senior living and understanding from previous investments and our experience in the space about the challenges with care coordination, the challenges with engaging patients, residents, their families. Certainly can see the scope and the direction of the need. And for us, as a cause-driven investor, we're looking for solutions that will help shape the healthcare industry and pull costs out of the system, making it more economically sustainable and centered around the individual person. And the CareMerge story in that respect is very strong. You have the ability to really capture the needs, clinical and non-clinical, of a resident and translate those into the workflows that will result in them getting better care and getting better interaction with their family when they need it. And so that story is very strong, and we certainly, as kind of spending all of our time in the healthcare space, understand how difficult that can be to actually translate that into the workflows in a way that goes far beyond just, I've created an app for that.
Yeah, so, so I'll talk about kind of how we got to the table. We actually tried to be first at the table, but Matt beat us out here. So we did have competing term sheets with Cambia. We didn't know it at the time, and when we found out that we lost, we of course were disappointed. But we, when we found out that it was Cambia and it was Matt, we were really encouraged about kind of the strategics that Asif had started to build around the company. So CareMerge is the second healthcare IT investment that we've done, and at the time we were aware of these care coordination challenges in the market, where you have a population that has 2, 3, 4 chronic diseases, 2, 3, or 4 doctors on top of caregivers and family members that really want to take care of that patient. And we thought the platform that Asif was building and where he was dropping that in and the partners that he had been able to create was pretty impressive. And the other thing that really got us hooked was Asif. We loved his background, and what he had done on a relatively little amount of capital was pretty impressive. He had three or four products at the time. He'd implemented a couple hundred facilities. He had a big pipeline. So we thought, you know, with Asif at the helm of this, and we really liked what was going on in the market, that, you know, this would be a good deal to get into. You know, and then, you know, couple that with all the strategics, you know, we were more than happy to follow and participate. So
I like to say we were first to the table because we found these guys along with Startup Health 3 years ago. So we were insiders in a lot of ways because we did invest in the company when we accepted them into the program. So it was good to sit back and watch these guys duke it out, right? But I would say three things that were really impressive, really, really impressive when Asif came around in his fundraise. The first was, there's been a lot of noise, at that time at least, about care coordination, right? All sorts of companies coming up with all types of solutions. And what was super impressive is the application in terms of the market that Asif had pinpointed, really underserved market in the senior care space. And it was hard to believe that in a world where technology was so advanced, how does this entire market just deal with pen and paper? How does that work, right, in today's world? So that was the interesting application of the market. That was number one that impressed us really a lot. Second to what Casey said, Asif, I mean, he's built an amazing team around himself, and 80% of the investment you make is in the team, right? So that was really impressive. And number three, just the laser focus these guys have on customer and making customers happy. These guys don't lose customers. Customers don't want to leave these guys, right? So it was amazing in this competitive space of IT to be able to have that level of customer retention was just super impressive.
I just want to say one thing. You guys are all calling my name. I am really nobody besides my team. So just to make sure, Fahad is back there. He's in the back. He's built a fantastic technology platform. So I'm really nobody without these teams. So it's really important to recognize that.
Absolutely. I think, that's something that's going to come up again and again, is the team is key. I like the dynamic here that each of the investors that are now backing you want to be first to the table, and each have their own story how they were. But I imagine there were others in the hunt. It was a successful company when you're in the capital raising process. One, how did you manage that process, and what really let these folks rise to the top?
Yeah, I think the key thing was... these organizations that came in the round, so they were, it was oversubscribed round. It was a small amount, but it was an oversubscribed round. And these companies that came in, they understand the problem. Insurance, GE Healthcare, Department of Defense, and we also have Ziegler and Linkage and Formation Capital, which are really focused on senior care. They're not here, but so all these guys, all these companies, they really experience it every single day. And they could understand what we're trying to do and what we're trying to figure out. So I think those were some of the reasons why we gravitated towards each other, mm-hmm. all of us, and it kind of worked out really amazingly at the end.
That's great. At the very first time I met Asif was at the Cleveland Clinic Startup Health Showcase a couple of years back, right around the time that I think the first financing was coming together, and I was doing my best to go out and meet companies in the room, and Asif was very, very focused and saying, I'd love to talk further, but we're really right on the edge of getting something done, so just please leave me alone and let's move on down the road. It was a very polite, it was actually the right answer from the lawyer's point of view, so get your deal done and then talk later. So with that in mind, you know, it's still a challenging process, even with a very amicable group of investors and people who want to back you. Is there any advice that you have for the entrepreneurs in the crowd of how to manage this process of bringing different investors to the table? And anything you would do differently, not necessarily from the partner level, but just process level?
Yeah, I think the key thing is in healthcare, there are so many different pieces, right? There's so many different providers, payers, you know, devices, list goes on. I think that if you're a startup, you really need to understand who is could be a good partner, could be a good channel, could be a good mentor for you and your company and help you grow in the right direction. Because, you know, the amount of research and the amount of knowledge that these people have, I mean, I can even go try to buy it, and I'd probably raise capital just for that, right? So just having an ability to kind of call Ruchita or Matt or, you know, Casey is introducing us to some senior living. I mean, you can't, you know, there's really no price tag you put on that value. So I think it's important to understand who it is. Money is definitely important. Capital you need to raise. But if you have a choice, you know, find the ones that can understand you and can help you. I think that's very important. And then just focus on explaining to them your traction and your value. And I think things can come together.
How about, I'm sure you had a preconceived notion of how this would happen once the investment was done and you would start to build your network collectively. But have there been any unanticipated, really significant value adds that you didn't see coming that the team brought to the table?
No, absolutely. I think there's the general guidance on a regular basis. So all of these guys are on our board. So we continue to listen to them and look at it. And we have a fairly transparent process. I mean, you know, we have pipeline reviews, you know, who's coming in, what are the clients, what the pipeline looks like. So I think making it transparent is obviously very helpful. I think it has been a really wonderful experience. From an unanticipated or something unplanned, it has been really a pleasant experience, at least from, you know, our side, because we have some, for example, the Ziegler folks who are not here, we have a biweekly call with their head of investment who looks at our pipeline and says, oh, let me send an email to this guy. Let me send an email to that guy. Let me call this person while we're actually on a call reviewing our pipeline. So, I mean, this is just incredible. And, you know, the same list, same things, you know, same process goes with all of these guys. I mean, I attended several of GE sessions, and Ruchita is always out to connecting me with people in China who are trying to figure this out, to all kinds of, you know, opportunities that the only, I think, it's become sometimes so overwhelming that you're like, I don't know where to go kind of thing. So you need to get down to business and say, okay, what do I need to do today? What do I need to focus on? What is my target market? How am I penetrating it? How am I getting traction on it? And then, sure, all these things are actually important, and you got to get your feelers out, kind of don't have a closed mindset, but just keep them on the outer bounds, and you'll get there when you get there. But just heads down and execute on what you need to do.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that's kind of interesting here is when we first started talking with Asif and his team and about building what a potential syndicate might look like, it was, what we ended up with was kind of an experiment in that, you know, Cambia is used to co-investing along, you know, solid syndicate partner names, and a lot of it, you know, we look for partners who bring things to the table that's more than capital. But, you know, candidly, this is a much bigger syndicate than we're typically accustomed, particularly relative to the size of the raise. But in a series of kind of Saturday conversations, you know, walking around the house, you know, kind of writing notes and texting pictures to each other, we started talking about, you know, what does an ideal syndicate look like, and how do you find partners that are going to bring things to the table and fill out the specific gaps that you're kind of trying to anticipate what your needs are going to be in the next couple of years. And so we looked for people that bring relationships that are different. We looked for people who we trust, and we wanted to make sure that we understood how different teams were incented and what their guiding philosophies are. And I would just say that, you know, for anyone building a syndicate of co-investors, that's something that's really, really important, is understanding how the individual partner, and understanding how the organization thinks about their strategic investing function. And I think especially looking to 2016, understanding who's going to be there if things start to dry up? Who's going to be there when times are tough? And who's going to really deeply engage and take the time to get to understand your business? And so these have been, you know, these have been great partners, but they were deliberately chosen. And there were certainly other names that we could have filled in and people that would have generated headlines. But this was a deliberate process.
Thank you. So we've talked big picture. I want to talk a lot more about the network and what each partner brings to the table for you in that vein that Matt's highlighting. But during the actual deal and getting the deal done, were there any obstacles for anyone that came up that you had to get over somehow or another, either from the company side, from a diligence perspective, or from your investor thesis coming in?
From my side, I think from our side, I think the terms that Cambia put out were really fair and really great. And I think everybody looked at it and like, oh, you know, I think there were maybe a few questions. I don't know from your perspective, you can talk more, but I think it was like very streamlined process, surprisingly, but.
Yeah, so I think from our side, I mean, Cambia did a lot of work in terms of structuring the deal, put the deal together. By the time that we got it, I mean, we had a couple of questions, but nothing really material. I would say as it relates to our diligence, this is Asif's first time being a founder, and we've backed a number of first-time founders, and as part of that, we always try to get a feel for, you know, how is a first-time founder thinking about building out the infrastructure of the company, building out the sales strategy, where is this kind of company headed? And after a meeting or two with Asif, we were immediately comfortable with how he had thought about the market. I think by that point, he had spent almost a year or more in an assisted living facility. He clearly understood the space. He came from GE Healthcare. So that was one kind of question mark that we wanted to get answered quickly, and we were able to, and you know, we were very enthusiastic about, you know, backing him as a first-time founder.
Yeah, I think for us, it was one of the fastest-moving deal processes that we surprised ourselves. We could move so fast. So, but I think just having Cambia lead and the thorough diligence they had done was really helpful for us. As GE, we're not super familiar with the senior living market, and so that was one of the things that we had to learn, and just partnering with Matt on that was super helpful in kind of bringing up to speed, because he's got a ton of expertise in that area.
I appreciate it. It was a great process. I think part of it is, philosophically, we try to dig our heels in way before we put a term sheet out, and so we think it's bad practice to put term sheets out and then find things, the gotchas that you really should have known going in. And so what that allows is, it results in a little bit of a delay to get to a deal. But once you're there, that the focus of diligence shifts, and so there's a certain amount of understanding what it is that you've gotten yourself into. But the other thing is that we really spend a lot of time trying to understand and assess team dynamic. Because there's nothing more important, I think, than that, because that's ultimately what you're putting your money behind. And then understanding what are the things, especially when you have a really capital efficient management team that's been doing what they can to get by to the point where they're raising a structured financing, to say, okay, now where are the sacrifices that they've made that you now have to go back and address so that this company can scale once you put dollars behind it? And it's a lot of really simple things, but really important things, like, are you using a bunch of free tools that now it's time to get Salesforce and time to get reporting trouble ticket systems and things that I mean, are the right decision at the time. And that's the right decision when you have, you know, a $10,000 MRR business or revenue business, and then, you know, maybe like an up to a $500,000. But once you start to develop real scale, you don't want to be trying to implement something and catch up, especially when it impacts customers. And their customer focus was so off the charts phenomenal that was, wanted to make sure that stayed.
What was the time to close? What's the relative timing between each investment? Was it short period or months, weeks, days?
I think we would get to the first term and got all the due diligence out four months, 5 months?
Yeah, I think what was unique here, I think another thing we really test is we push management to say, are you raising the right amount? Are you structuring it the right way? And we try to structure things in a way that makes sense for the company. And we went back and forth on that. I don't recall what the actual time to close was. Once we got a term sheet locked in, though, and we dealt with several other, you know, the definitive docs and things, it wasn't unreasonable.
Yeah, I think it was maybe a couple of months when we had the term sheet, because we had been bringing, once we had the term sheet, we shared it with the rest of the syndicate partners, and everybody was like, oh, it's Cambia. Okay, great. Let's just, and who else is involved? I think it was a very smooth process afterwards.
Yeah, I think once the allocations were decided, it was a matter of weeks, yeah, I think.
Yeah, And how about that allocation division? Was that a hot company like CareMerge and a lot of investor interest? That can be a challenge, I think, for everyone to balance.
Oh, we got ugly.
No. Yeah. Well, you've moved past it, and everyone's up here today, because you're all in. But I'm sure there may be others who may have a different opinion. But I had a question for Arsenal specifically. Yeah. So digging a little bit deeper into building networks, but from a higher view of rather than CareMerge, if you had the choice between partnering with say, a pure financial investor who you have a track record with, or a key strategic partner called Cambia or GE or otherwise, how do you weigh those alternatives? Yeah. And
which we choose?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good question. So Arsenal, you know, especially out of our DoD fund, I mean, we think we're a strategic investor. And out of the fund that we invested in CareMerge with, I mean, that's kind of a traditional fund. But I think from a healthcare perspective, we like to have both. Mm-hmm. So, you know, GE or Cambia, they bring a lot of strategic leverage to the deal. They really know healthcare. They have a lot of domain expertise that we don't have. And that's so critical at the formative stages of a company. You know, who are the right customers? Who are the right stakeholders? How do you approach them? How do you think about that? That's really important insight that we necessarily can't bring. But I think I'll just speak broadly about kind of traditional investors. Yeah. I think, you know, for a venture firm that's been investing for 15, 20 years, they've also seen a lot. And they've seen, you know, right ways to build a company, wrong ways to build a company. And while healthcare is a complex and, you know, kind of very interesting industry, you know, outside perspectives, I think, do add value. So in terms of how to build a company, how to build out the infrastructure, I think when you have strategics and kind of traditional VCs, you have diversity of thought, which is important, you know, in building a business. So I think, you know, in an ideal situation, we have both, which we have in this deal, which we're excited about. So.
Excellent. And spinning it around a little bit for GE and Cambia, if there's another strategic at the table in an investment that you're looking at, there's certainly different types of strategic investors and partners in the market, whether it's payers, providers, or otherwise. Does it change your calculus regarding who those strategic partners are by category, and is there any preference from either side of the table that works better for you?
Yeah, I think there is no hard and fast rule. Obviously, things get a little weird if you're on the table with a direct competitor in that space, which there have been cases like that for us as well. But we try to avoid situations like that. But I would say generally there's no hard and fast rules. But one of the things that is such a great ratification of a company is when customers want to invest in you, right? And so be it current customers or be it future customers. And that was one of the things we saw in this round where be it the DoD or be it the Signature or Cambia, there were customers, potential customers who wanted to invest in this company. And there's no better ratification of how valuable a technology is than that. So we'll take any number of strategics on alongside and in the syndicate as long as they're customers, but also other strategics as long as they bring something different from us to the table, because you don't want two people who bring the exact same thing and trying to fight it out.
Yeah, and we evaluate everything on kind of a case-by-case basis. We build relationships. We look for people that have and teams that have integrity. We look for the people that are going to be around. We look for what strategic investors are going to bring. But it's largely about kind of like you find out who your friends are when you have a flat tire. You think about who are the people who are going to be there, and these companies, there's such a high when you go and make the investment, and there's a temptation to kind of, you know, wave a banner in the air and celebrate, and that's not the time to celebrate. That's when the hard work begins, and you know there'll be some really, you know, great trajectory, exciting times ahead, but there will be tough times, and you need to find out who's actually going to kind of earn their keep at that point.
So we sit here in San Francisco during JP Morgan week at Startup Health Festival. There are an amazing number of companies here in this room and beyond. For the investors, how does a company differentiate itself from the crowd and the noise? In the case of CareMerge, obviously us, the team pulled it off, but there are a lot of other great companies that may be flying below radar and need a little lift. How do they do that?
So I'll start on that. So I was thinking about this a little bit, you know, the start of the morning, there's so many companies here and there's a lot of investors and there's so much going on. But I think it's important if you're a startup to not get distracted or worried about all the noise, especially of this week, and just focus on kind of your swim lane or your sector. Knowing who the investors are, have they invested in your space before, what does their portfolio look like, who are the right customers? What do I know about them? Do I have a solution that might solve their problem? Who are the right partners? And just not worrying about, you know, the 500 or 1,000 companies that are already here. So I would say kind of focus on your sector, your swim lane, and not get distracted by the rest of the noise of the week.
Yeah, I think to build on that, have a very clear strategy of why are you here as a startup? What are you trying to do? Are you here to talk to customers? Are you here to fundraise and talk to investors? Don't mix the two, because then it just gets confusing in your own head, right, what you're trying to do. Also, don't fundraise until you fundraise, right? And don't fundraise until you need the money, because I've spoken to so many companies that are just, I call it fundraising tourism. It's just, they talk to investors just to talk to investors. And after a while, there's a certain amount of fatigue. I've spoken to this company how many times, right? And there's still nothing actionable here. They haven't gone out and officially launched a fundraising campaign. So just keep that in mind. Don't fundraise until you actually need the money, and then go out full blast.
I think that's excellent advice. And the only other thing I'd just offer is, from the investor's perspective, as they're kind of hopping from meeting to meeting, just keep in mind that from their perspective, I would hold a little tight on the pitch, because they're getting overwhelmed. Investors are getting overwhelmed by everybody trying to shove a card at them indiscriminately. And make sure that your messaging is tight, and keeping in mind that everybody has a slide about how they lower readmissions, and you see it. And I know how big the market is for CCM, or, you know, and it's... you know, conveying that you're the team that's going to execute, it's really important. And I would save and try to push as much of the follow-up for afterwards, and do it in a strategic way, not just a, you know, shotgun blast, trying to hit everybody that you can, because it's going to be a whole ton of waste of time for everybody.
Asa, for you, picking up on Rashida's comment, in terms of that fundraising cycle, I mean, fundraising really can be another full-time job for a management team, and it can be exhausting. How do you balance that versus running the business, growing the business? And is it easy to tell when it's time to raise the money?
I think these guys said it really clearly. I mean, especially Rashida, if you need the money, you need to organize yourselves to accomplish that. And it's challenging. I mean, you have clients to support, and you're bootstrapping, and so I think, you know, I think where it worked out, or the way we thought about it, is, look, you know, we keep our heads down, bootstrap, get to clients, get to post revenue, at least have something tangible to show, right? To say, hey, here's what was first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, look, it's working. And as you kind of moving that along, you got to really make sure you get really best people in your team, because if you're the founder or one of the co-founders and raising capital, you can't drop the ball on the business. So it's like, it's very challenging. So you really need to make sure you focus on it at the right time, and then you have at least some base that you can say, okay, you know, for maybe 3-4 months, I'm not as involved, and understanding it's a very small team, but we just gotta get this done. And then focus on it, announce it in the market. I think lots of people, it's so funny, use it. Fundraising tourism or something like that. It was really funny. But, you know, just focus on, and then book meetings and just go at it, right? Just go and get it done. You have to meet a lot of people, you know, but start from a list of, okay, these are the people who invest in healthcare. These are the strategics. These are the traditionals. These are some other whatever. Segment them just like you're going after your market. Focus on the most important ones. Try to get to them through relationships like Startup Health. And other partners that you have, or other entrepreneurs. We all introduce each other. And just hit it really hard. And you would have to probably do like 40, 50, 60 meetings with different VCs before you finally find, you know, few that are really nice match from culture and all these other reasons. Then you pull the trigger and hopefully get a couple of term sheets and so focus. I mean, I think in startups, you just focus with your clients when it's time to raise capital, whatever. So you have limited resources, which is your time. So really need to focus on, and a specific time, what your focus is and how you execute.
What is the earliest that any of you will back a company? And if you're stepping out, perhaps out of your typical threshold of investment, is there a hook that you would move down and sort of stage to invest in?
Yeah, so any,
for everyone.
Yeah, sure, sure. I'll take that. So we've done a couple seed deals, one or two, and I think the common denominator then has been, you know, overweight relevant experience by the founder, meaning they've started 2, 3, or 4 companies in that space, so they have an understanding of kind of what the financing requirements are, who the customers are. They've already sold them. They already have those relationships. So I think that's definitely a wow factor that kind of mitigates some of that early stage risk. The second thing would be, especially from a healthcare perspective, if you're an early stage company and, you know, maybe you're a spin out of a larger, you know, healthcare strategic or stakeholder, having large partnerships with some of these organizations, whether that's financial or strategic or both, you know, that's helpful too for us to get over the hump, because we typically like to see companies that have a product, it's out in the market, customers are representative of the broader market, you know, those types of things. But we will go earlier, you know, if some of those factors are there.
Cambia's model allows us to be stage agnostic, and so we've done small check sizes. We backed a Y Combinator company that's slightly outside of healthcare in a 6-figure check, and all the way up to, we were an investor with a 9-figure exit recently. But I think because our model is that we deeply engage with the entrepreneurs and the management teams, it's difficult to find an investment where it makes sense that we'll ever get a return based on that threshold. And so we're looking for really extraordinary circumstances. And I think candidly, we'll be probably doing some things to kind of shift up how we approach seed stage investing so that we can still reach the really transformative, innovative companies in a way that makes sense.
I think we do most of our seed stage investing with Startup Health because we trust these guys more than we trust ourselves at that stage. But if there are a few cases where we've done it on our own, and I think it's a couple of different things that catches our attention. A, it's a team. It's a repeat entrepreneur that we've backed before, and things have turned out really well. So in that case, we will go at it in a very early stage with the entrepreneur. Or if it's something that's super strategic to GE, we'll go super early. Or sometimes it's a very unique situation, either a unique market opportunity that we believe in, unique business model, something that we want to be in at the early stage to be able to learn from it along with the company. So those probably are a couple of cases where we've done it outside of Startup Help.
I'm sure that everything has gone incredibly smooth and swimmingly from the very first day you launched the company. But just in case it hasn't, were there any significant pivots that you've had to manage through within the business or as you go forward? And then also from the investor perspective, both within CareMerge and beyond, I'd love to hear whether that sort of, you know, fundamental pivot is something you expect in an investment as you approach it, or whether you hope that that's happened before you come in.
So I'll go. I think we haven't seen any significant pivots. I think what we realized is we were focusing on solving the problem for the higher acuity patients. And we knew at some point in time this will be important for a whole bunch of other people outside. And I'm just glad that it's starting to work out. You know, people who are the health systems or payers or physicians, for whatever reason, they need to know what's going on with their higher risk patients. And we have a mechanism to get them pulled in the loop. So I think now we're starting to look at how do we leverage our hold in the senior care market and leverage the health systems and the payers to further go into the same market, but those are now become our channels. So going into it, we have health systems buying CareMerge to offer it to post-acute care to say, hey, if you want my patients, I want you to keep me informed and then show me exceptions so I can care better and we can work together. And you don't have to pay for this. I paid for it. You just use it if you want my patients. So it's really exciting times for us. And I don't see it as a pivot. I think it's a natural evolution of where we're at.
In the case of CareMerge, what's interesting, not to speak out of turn, but the it's not about, I think, what can be equally or even more difficult than trying to pivot in a situation where things are underperforming is how to manage your success. And with CareMerge, you know, we have to have deliberate board-level discussions about making priorities with the resources that address different areas of the market where we see real opportunity. And the product people have designed a platform that has really strong capabilities around care coordination. And they've developed a platform that really knows how to engage family members and knows how to match the family members with give them role-based access to interact with the people who are delivering care to their family. And there's a social engagement platform that can be used by the residents. And so when you have constraints around the number of programming resources, when you have marketing people who can only go after so much and you're trying to manage your message and the direction, then it can be really tough to not go down one path that looks successful and keep the focus where it needs to be. And so it's a good problem to have, but it really is a problem.
So I'll speak to kind of Arsenal's experience with pivots. We really don't anticipate a pivot at the stage at which we invest. It certainly happened. So it's happened in healthcare, and it's tough, frankly. Customers can be different. You oftentimes need more capital. Management teams can be different. So it takes a lot of time and resources. And so after having done it a few times, we do invest at a point where, you know, we think those pivots have already happened. But if we're in a deal and they do need to happen, you know, we work with the board of the investors on, you know, what's the best way to do this pivot and what's our role and, you know, those types of things. So.
Excellent. Ruchita, anything?
Yeah, I would just build on Matt's point is in terms of managing your success. Also, how do you continue maintaining the quality of the team? That's, I think, one of the big learning experience for all of us. We're working on it together is, As you start scaling, you have to hire a lot of people in a very short period of time to just keep the ramp up. And how do you continue to hire the best people who not only fit in with your team, but execute in the way that your company needs to execute? And so that's a big hurdle, I guess, but it's a good problem to have. That means you're scaling your business.
Right. Excellent. So. I think in any investor group, you may come to the table with different expectations or horizons for investment. I think everyone in this room likely understands that the sales cycle for healthcare is often more challenging than a lot of other sectors that investors back in tech sector or otherwise. I expect that everyone on this panel came to this investment in this business with that understanding. But how do you manage the different expectations amongst the group? And is that something that you would discuss ahead of time or just manage as you go? And that's really for anybody.
I just do what Matt says.
Okay.
We need to.
just kidding. No, I think it's, we have a very, as you can see, that just the rapport between us, we're very open lines of communication. So if there is something that I want to discuss at the board meeting, I call up Asif or I call up Matt or both of them and say, hey, just something to put on the agenda. So it's just maintaining very clear lines of communication and having that rapport amongst the board members and the leadership team to say, you know, we're not going to hide any issues. We're not going to hide any problems. We're going to discuss it and put everything on the table.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think that transparency is super important. I think the other thing that is that maybe strategics can bring, and I wouldn't make a blanket statement to say that they do. Understanding the time horizon in healthcare, and I think it's particularly difficult for startup companies that are funded in these cycles, but are selling into health systems and payers, and that measure, you know, these things in months and sometimes in years. You need a different level of patience than I think a lot of the financial or traditional people with a consumer internet background can possibly fathom. And so you need partners that have a long time horizon. They have a long perspective. And are not looking at things quarter by quarter or LP statement to LP statement in some cases.
Yeah, fully agree with that. If you have a group of investors and one isn't really familiar with healthcare, how long that it takes? I mean that can be challenging just to get them educated up to speed on. You know, sometimes it takes 12 or 18 months to close some of these deals. So we've had. You know, we've been invested in four or five healthcare companies now, so we think we have a pretty good feel for how they go. And Arsenal's model is kind of built around large organizations, and I can tell you that there's nobody that takes longer to buy anything than the DoD. So we have a good feel for that, and you know, we bring, you know, that patience that we've built over 10 plus years to, you know, we think a healthcare company like CareMerge.
And for the investors, I mean, I think one of the great opportunities and benefits of having a partnership like this here is that there are channels that can be opened up through the investor base into the payer systems. And is that something that you're seeing more of? Are you seeing generally a greater number of companies looking to find partnerships like this amongst financial and strategic backers? And is the opening up of the customer base through the investor channel something that you're seeing?
I think more companies, to your first question, I think more companies are looking to put together syndicates like this, mm-hmm. where they invite multiple strategics. I think that the role of strategics in invest in sitting on boards and investing has evolved a lot over the last few years, and there is a somewhat of a transformed view on what value strategics can bring to the table. So yes, a lot more companies are looking for that, and I think it does open up new channels. I think one of the things we have been exploring is we have a member on our team who manages our portfolio companies with all our healthcare customers, so the big providers and the health systems. Traditionally, that hasn't been a space that ASIF has been selling to, but it does open up that channel, and there's been interesting traction that you're seeing in that channel. And so sometimes just bringing in that perspective does open up new channels and does open up new distribution models and business models that you hadn't thought of.
What's tough, though, is understanding now that corporate venture capital and strategic investing has become sexy and everybody wants to have a group and everybody wants to offer pilots, but you're not exactly sure how that happens. I think it's really tough for people to kind of actually sanity check their potential partners. And when they're talking to investors who are trying to portray the company line and say, this is our model, this is what we do, to kind of pull that curtain back and say, okay, so let's see what you've done, let's see how you're structured, let's see who's incentivized to actually add the value, and avoid that kind of letdown that happens after the fact when you go, okay, so here we go, you said you'd deliver me pilots or you made me promises for introductions or whatever, and you find out that those teams aren't geared, and it's not about bad intent, but just they're just not geared to be able to provide the value that they're promising, or the partners or the people are not incentivized, or they don't have the organizational gumption to be able to deliver on it and be around again kind of for the long term. And I think that's a real danger because it's creating a lot of noise right now.
Yeah, just to add to that point, I think something that will be valuable for entrepreneurs is we have to be careful. So there are a lot of strategics that bring a lot of value to the table. Just be wary when strategics ask ahead of time for some value tied to a future thing that they want to deliver, right? So if they're asking for some types of options, warrants, just be super wary of things like that because to Matt's point, things take a while to come to fruition. And things, as they are promised, things don't always come true to that. And if you're giving away a certain amount of value in your company based on that, when things go bad and things don't materialize, then you're stuck. You've still given away that value. So just be wary of strategics who upfront ask for some sort of a commitment from you in turn of a future value that they will deliver to you.
I would actually add something to it. There are some strategics that we had in the past, and they wanted warrants and all those. We always tie those back to revenue or something from them. So we say, okay, if you want this much of equity, we're not just going to give it away as a pilot. You have to commit X many locations, X many patients, X many by such and such date and time. Otherwise, those disappear. You know, so this kind of helps you as a startup to say, look, you know, I'm offering something really valuable here, but you know, you cannot just take it. You have to work for it and work with me to get to that point. And it just drives up value for everybody.
You know, how many investors do you think you've come across in the process of your fundraising? And with the focus on, I expect it's a couple.
Yeah, no, I think we at least met between, I would say 50 to 70.
And in terms of meetings or discussions you've had along the way. So stay the course.
One final thing, just like the environment is shifting. And I think people can feel it. Nobody knows where it's going to head. But in your pitches, as you're talking to investors, be really focused on being not just a point solution and not just something that is, you know, right now there is so much noise because, especially for digital health companies, it's so easy to start a company. Those barriers to entry are so low right now. And when you couple that with the tremendous need with healthcare reform, with all of the different, you know, the push to value-based care, and all of these trends, I mean, it's become this kind of perfect storm for a digital health gold rush. And a lot of that's great because you get a lot of excitement built. But now we're going to go through a time, I think, where the space is maturing, and that's a good thing. But we need more. I think the bar gets higher, and you need to be able to articulate better about why you're going to build a lasting business and how you're going to go beyond just providing technology, providing bodies, to build something that actually can integrate in with today's existing system and how you're going to get consumer eyeballs and consumers to interact with it. how you're going to be able to tie back to the existing docs, the existing health systems, the existing payers. And I think that the appetite for, we're going to figure that out when we get there, is going to dissipate pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would totally agree with Matt. I mean, digital health is no longer new. I mean, this year there was $4 or $5 billion invested. Last year there was $6 or $7 billion invested. And I think we're probably coming to the end of, as Matt said, kind of the point solution and the platforms that provide a lot of value for a lot of different stakeholders and can work well with their partners and really help their end customers on that transition to value, whether it's an employer, a provider, a payer, others. I think that's just going to be critical. So keep that in mind as you're talking to investors. I fully agree with what Matt said.
Yeah, I think the advice I'll give is probably very simplistic but very important. You have a lot of stakeholders in your company building process. You have advisors, you have investors, you have your team members, but your most important stakeholder is your customer. So be laser focused on your customer. Never ever compromise in terms of the customer, because ultimately that's what drives your business.
So with that, we're going to wrap. And I would like to thank the panel and Startup Health. And hopefully you can track us all down a little bit afterwards if you'd like to continue discussion. Thank you.
Thank you so much to the panel. Big round of applause.